Hello there, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, and welcome to the NeuroCuriosity Club podcast, the only podcast that I'm aware of that is specifically made for people who are questioning their neurotype and their place in the neurodiversity paradigm. My name is Megan. I am AudiHD, so I'm autistic and ADHD, but this podcast is going to be about so much more than that. Yes, there are going to be lots of autism and ADHD episodes because that's my lived experience. That's what I can speak to. But I also plan on having so many amazing guests on this podcast to talk about everything from dyspraxia to OCD to bipolar disorder to dyscalculia and more. So if you are curious about your brain, get ready to dive in. Welcome to the NeuroCuriosity Club podcast. Hey there, Jennifer. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me on the podcast, Megan.
Thank you for being here. I'm so, so, so excited. So for everybody listening, I have with me today Jennifer Harvey Salen, who runs the Instagram account at Intergifted. And we are going to be talking about giftedness today, which is a form of neurodivergence. And it's something that I have lots of questions about that I'm excited to ask Jennifer. And we're just going to have a really cool conversation about, you know, what it's like to be a gifted adult. So with that in mind, Jennifer, could you tell me just a little bit of, this is the worst question in the world, I apologize, but tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me how you got started on Instagram and why giftedness? Why is this your topic?
Well, giftedness is my topic because I'm a gifted person who was kind of struggling, coming into adulthood and being like, okay, I'm clearly just not like a lot of the people around me, and I'm not sure why. And I'm irritating people, and I don't know why. I'm confused by people, and I don't know why. And then I relearned about giftedness. I had been in gifted education as a kid, and then I relearned about it like in my late 20s. And I just suddenly understood so much of my entire life and why I had struggled. And I thought, why the hell did nobody tell me this was going to follow me to my adulthood? And why didn't they give me tools to understand what was going on and how what I could do about it, you know? So there are different stories. I grew up in a non-gifted family. I didn't have, you know, some of the privilege that people have when they grow up in a gifted family and they have a lot of like gifted type resources available to them and interactions available to them. And so, I had a harder time than somebody that maybe had a lot of gifted specific stuff around them. So it's not to say that my story should be like everybody's story. But that was a big awakening for me. And then I started looking at what is gifted psychology? What is gifted specific psychology for adults? And there was just like almost nothing. There was the blessed book, Living with Intensity, which I make a lot of reference to. And that was a great start. And then there were a few others, but not so much. And I thought, oh my God, people need to be talking about this. Like I needed to find a gifted specific therapist and I couldn't find one. And I was doing, I'm a psychologist, so I was doing psychology and coaching work. And I was thinking, I need to know what to tell clients that are like me. And then I thought, well, I need to work with more clients like me. That would solve a lot of my career dilemmas anyway. So then I rebranded myself and moved into the gifted specific space. I obviously did a ton of study and figured out how to best support people like myself. So then from there, then I started Intergifted in 2015, and Intergifted's an international organization that's kind of a combination of community, international community, and support. So we do coaching, assessments, and training. I do a lot of training for coaches and psychologists and psychiatrists and other professionals in gifted specific psychology. So yeah, it's grown really big. We've been around for 9 years, which is pretty cool. And then we do a lot of awareness raising on Instagram, which is of course how you found me. So talking about giftedness in adulthood and throughout the lifespan, and that it's not the exact same thing, being a gifted kid and being a gifted adult. And what do we need to know as gifted adults kind of trying to navigate the world, you know?
Yeah, what do we need to know as gifted adults trying to navigate the world? Like, I know there's not one piece of advice that's going to be a one size fits all, especially for, gifted adults. Like, I feel like there's lots of different ways it can manifest and everything. But if you were to like be able to give one like really solid piece of advice for gifted adults, does anything automatically come to mind?
Yeah, the first one is the easiest one, which is we have to know we're gifted. I mean, there's so little education about it. And it seems ironic, like that I was in gifted education myself, and then I still didn't really get that I was a gifted person. And, as an adult, I had to rediscover it. There's just so little education about this. I mean, in a sense, fair enough, it's a very small minority of the general population, right? So, there's some people, if you go by IQ score, people say 2%. I think it's wider than that, but I mean, let's say 5%, just in a sort of conservative estimate. That's still a very small percentage of the population. So I get why it's not like the first topic that we learn, but it should be considered just like every other neurodivergence should be neurodivergence should be considered, right? And educated about so that people can recognize themselves and go, oh, this is a thing for me. So that's like number one. And that could sound like so simple, like, okay, so find out and then what? I mean, I can give some then what's, but that first one is really big because it's not an automatic. You're not just going to find it out, like, because that's a normal thing that's taught in the general population. I hope that that changes, of course, but so it takes work to find it out to begin with. And if you don't find it out and you struggle a lot with the things that gifted adults struggle with, and that's not even saying anything about twice exceptionality and multi-exceptionality, having giftedness plus other neurodivergence. But if you're struggling and you don't know how, you might be blaming, or you don't know why, you might be blaming yourself. You might be thinking, a lot of people, for example, neurodivergent people go to therapy, regular therapy, that's not neurodivergent specific. And then they think that they are a failure as a therapy client, or that they try regular academia and they think, well, I failed at it. And so, like, getting these kinds of low self-esteem patterns and shame and all of these things, if they just knew that their brain was different and their brain worked differently and they knew why, that would be the great start to a whole different path ahead in life,
Yeah, absolutely. I think that can be said for all kinds of neurodivergencies. The half the battle is knowing that you're having a battle, like knowing that something's going on. I think, yeah, that's super helpful. So what are some of the then whats, that come up? Like, okay, I'm gifted, now what?
Well, first, then you can know that you're not a failure at regular life. It's just that you should do your life differently. And so then you can get, I mean, sometimes it takes people stages of healing and grief and other things to get here, but then you can get really creative with your life and you can say, okay, so I'm not gonna be trying to fit into the norm. That's like I can take away the masking, I can take away the self-blame and the shame and everything, and now I can just get creative about my present and future, and I can look at what do I need and how do I get those needs met. And I think a lot of times people get scared, like they think, oh, okay, so what I really need is that the whole world be different and accept me how I am. But that's not. You don't need that. You need enough acceptance. You need enough of a social support network. You need enough opportunities for yourself. You don't need the whole world to be different. But it feels like that when we're starving, and we think, like from a trauma lens, if we have gifted trauma, feeling like our giftedness has made us really not fit in or whatever else, then we can kind of, the trauma lens sees things as very black and white. And so we tend to go like, oh, it's white right now, it needs to be black, or it's black right now, it needs to be white. Now there's a whole gray zone in there. You just need enough recognition, enough understanding, enough opportunities, enough resources. And so then you can get creative with what that enough looks like in your own case. And so, like in my case, I will never be working in an office again. I will never be, working 9 to 5 with like the usual stuff. I will never go through an educational system in a very neurotypical way. There's just stuff that I know. And then I don't even put that as an expectation for what I should do. And I don't consider myself a failure anymore because I don't do those things in the normal way. So along with that, that creativity that arises, then there also has to become, oh, there also has to be courage to do a lot of self-advocacy. And Where I think a lot of people get scared of that because they think, oh my God, it's going to be like me shouting into the void. Who's going to listen? Advocacy is always something that we do collectively. Like we do it on our own, but we do it because we are supported somehow by some kind of collective. And again, that doesn't have to be the whole collective. But you know, like with the work you do on Instagram, like you help people to then advocate for themselves in their regular life. Like you're a support for them. And our Instagram and our presence, our community and stuff does the same thing for people. It's like we kind of allow a person to say, okay, I can do this. There's something out there that I can anchor into. And there's something out there that exists that's not just me trying to prove that I'm not crazy or something. You know, like this is a thing and I can advocate for myself. And I have reference points for that. So there's the creativity part and there's the self, like the courage for self-advocacy, but then the remembrance that none of that happens in an isolated vacuum. And if a person is like in an isolated vacuum and has no support or anything, I think it's unfair to say to them, just get creative about your life and just advocate for yourself. You got to have the community, you know? So it's a virtuous circle when we get started in this recognition, like, you know, that first step of just like recognizing, knowing that you're fighting a battle and figuring out why. And then once you figure that out, then getting community so that you can, you know, generate that creativity and that courage to do what you need to do and make a good life for yourself, which is going to be
Yeah.
unconventional. And so just
Yeah,
accept that as early as you can.
absolutely. Okay, so something I want to kind of backtrack to is defining giftedness. Because in order for us to know that we're gifted, we have to know what giftedness is, you know? And like you mentioned, IQ is not necessarily like the best indicator, I feel like. So I'm really curious, like, how would you define giftedness and how do you recognize it?
You're right. I mean, with IQ, it can be a good tool in certain circumstances, but it really is limited in what it's measuring. So if you have emotional giftedness, creative giftedness, sensual or physical giftedness, existential giftedness, none of those things are going to be recognized. And many forms of intellectual giftedness as well aren't going to be recognized on an IQ test because, I mean, it's limited by what you can do in a quantitative setting, you know, quantitative context. So anything that's like data driven is going to limit the full humanity, the full scope humanity kind of view of things. So I developed a more qualitative way of looking at it in a much more holistic way. That starts with intellectual giftedness because I think when we talk about giftedness, generally we're talking about intellectual giftedness. It's the giftedness is the kind of universal shorthand for intellectual giftedness, but it can come with a lot of these other forms of giftedness. And so, for a person who's gifted in all of these ways or many, you know, several of these ways, like let's say somebody that's intellectually and emotionally gifted and creatively gifted, if you just focus on their intellectual giftedness, or just that little IQ score part of their intellectual giftedness, I mean, you're reducing them and their intellect and their giftedness down to something quite simplistic compared to what it actually is and how it actually manifests in life. So I help people look at all of these different areas of intelligence, these six that I mentioned. So if anybody wants me to repeat them, I will just, you know, for listening. And there's a lot that I've written about it on our website, so people can go read about it there. But so it's intellectual, emotional, creative, sensual, physical, and existential. And those are all different forms of intelligence that everybody shows, and even most life forms show some kind of version of that intelligence. And so anybody has that kind of intelligence, not just gifted people. It's just that gifted people show a more complex nature of engaging in those kinds of pursuits. So complex intellect, complex creativity. And then the higher you get on the giftedness scale, the more complex it becomes. And I always explain like complex is better in some cases, and simple is better in some cases. And anywhere in between, the most complex and the most simple is better in some cases. So when people get the idea like, oh, giftedness is better, I'm like, meh. Giftedness is different. And for certain circumstances and certain tasks, it's a better fit, but that doesn't actually make it better than simple. And I mean, anybody that's gifted that's listening can know what I'm talking about, because you go to a job and they tell you, could you please do this task? And the task is like a linear ABC task. And the gifted person's like, right. And then makes it super complex. And there's ABC, Z, 1, 2, 3, 4, symbol, symbol, symbol. And they have it all mapped out in a big thing. And the boss is like, what the hell are you doing? I just asked you to do ABC and I've done all this other stuff and it's not necessary. And the gifted person's like, well, I don't know how to do it otherwise. I can't do ABC. And then you can really see that the complexity there is just a really bad match for the task at hand. And so maybe a gifted person could say, well, they should want it to be more complex, but that's not the real world. The real world is there's a lot of things that just aren't so complex and they're very linear. And so the task of the gifted person is to really understand who needs my complexity, where is my complexity valued and useful, and where is it just not the right fit? And that doesn't make complexity wrong, and it doesn't make simplicity better. It just means there's a whole range of needs in the world, and not every brain is going to fit every task that's needed out there. So that really helps us to just take all of that black and white thinking out and just go like, this is a totally nuanced thing. It's completely individual. And sometimes I think there are a lot of gifted people who wish sometimes they could be simpler in their mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's this, like you said, there's sort of this idea that intelligence is a hierarchy, and there's like more intelligent to less intelligent. And not only that, but there is that directly equates to better person, worse person,
Oh
and
my
which
God,
is
yeah.
obviously nonsense, but it is pervasive, right? It is around. And I guess I'm wondering how we can promote like pride and understanding for like gifted people without also saying like, oh, but we're like better. You know, like how can we like, and I know this is probably a relatively simplistic question, because I mean the answer is just be proud of yourself without putting other people down. Like this isn't that hard, but in a society that values dichotomies and black and white and yes or no, like it can be difficult. So I'm wondering, how do you work with your clients on like being proud of their giftedness without seeing themselves as like superior?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think that's a lot of that early education when you find out about being gifted to begin with. I mean, a lot of people are even scared to identify with the label because they think, well, if I say that, that means I think I'm superior. And some people don't believe that, but some people actually feel that. And so they will not identify with the label because when they think the thought, they actually have feelings of superiority and that they feel bad. And that points back to what you're saying about that this is a whole contextual issue. This is a whole societal issue that it's been set up to look so dichotomous, and it's not at all. It's super nuanced, but it's been set up that way. But I often go on rants about our narcissistic culture, and I mean in the West, and how like the conflated issue between narcissism and high intelligence has like been very pervasive. So like being like, oh, those super highly gifted people are going to save us. And then those super highly gifted people that tend to have quite narcissistic presentations in toxic narcissism. I don't mean healthy narcissism, toxic narcissism. Then they feed into that. And so it kind of grows into this whole savior kind of thing, and they're better and they know better and everything else. And I think, things that have been happening in the last couple of years start to put holes in that theory. And I think that's a good thing collectively. I think it's good for us to see that super smart people can make huge mistakes. They don't necessarily have high moral reasoning, and they don't necessarily always do good things. They can do really evil things sometimes. And so that just like helps us so much to get out of like superior and inferior questions. Because this was one of the big, I mean, from the whole history of IQ testing and the intelligence history, there was this misunderstanding or this misrepresentation of things that like the people with the high IQs were better. And this gets into the whole history of like race, the idea of race and IQ and whatever else. Like, so it gets into a whole ugly history, the history which left us collectively with this kind of defunct idea about basically white people have higher IQs and are thus morally superior and can do whatever we want and that kind of stuff. And yeah, the whole thing just gets totally, messed up and mixed around. And so it makes sense that somebody would be scared to say, yeah, I identify as gifted. So like a huge part of my work has been around like demystifying all of that and getting it into a much more nuanced conversation and realizing that never has anything to do with being better or worse. It's just literally different. And different needs different things, but different doesn't mean better. And it's not like better people need better things. It's just different people need different things. And as a sort of cautionary, like how can I say that? Like a kind of a cautionary thing to let people know, yeah, there's a whole history here, and it can be easy to fall into some of those old beliefs. And so we have to be really mindful how we engage with the idea of giftedness and how we engage in our own self-discovery. And so then this points back to the community aspect. Like if we don't have community to plug back into, we're just like left adrift with our own, however we've taken in the collective history of intelligence and what we do with it. And I think that's too much to ask for and from any person. It's a very confusing feeling, and it brings up a lot of discomfort for a lot of people. And so I think the collective now, I mean, the collective that's becoming aware of giftedness and stuff, we have a lot of responsibility in the way that we engage with the topic and the way we raise community around it and raise awareness around it, that we're talking about it in a very nuanced way that doesn't make anybody better or worse, and that holds people responsible for what they do with their giftedness. Because if I'm gifted and I go out there and I do evil stuff, I'm responsible for that, you know?
Right. It's not better just because you're gifted. It's
Right,
still bad
exactly.
stuff. Yes.
Yeah, I
Oh,
don't get a free
totally.
pass for anything just because I have more complex intellectual thoughts than the average.
Yeah, I think it's sort of like how people always say, like, oh, ADHD isn't an excuse and, autism isn't an excuse. Well, giftedness isn't an excuse either.
Right,
Like, let's not be
exactly.
making excuses for ourselves when what we really need is maybe some accountability.
Yeah.
Hi there. I am interrupting your podcast episode super, super quickly just to let you know that if you want more than just the podcast, if you want to actually talk to me, that is an option. I have something called a discovery call. This is for people who, you're not sure if you want to actually like commit to working with me long term, but you kind of want to learn more. And maybe you have some questions about your brain that, I might be able to help you answer. And that's what the discovery call is for. It is $15 for a half hour call. That $15 is really just to help ensure that people actually show up. When they were free, I had a lot of no-shows, which is really hard on my autistic brain, with the change of plans last second and everything. So that's all the $15 is for, is just a little incentive to keep your appointment. And I would love, love, love to talk to some of you amazing podcast listeners. So if you're interested, the link is in the show notes, and I'll let you get back to your episode.
Just as you're pointing to that, I mean, it's a really interesting thing because that's been some of my concern about the neurodivergent space, even though I adore it on one hand, but I've sometimes been concerned about it because it can promote this kind of like free pass feeling, like, oh well, I'm neurodivergent, so I don't have to like go by those societal expectations. And that part of that's true, and then part of that is like, yeah, but you're also responsible for creating what how society interacts with this neurodivergence anyway, and what you do with it. And so, yeah, it's always, again, being in that nuanced space, having these discussions, it's always been really top on my mind that none of it becomes just like a free pass to victimhood or feeling like, like I said before, society owes me everything. The whole world should change because I need something different. It's kind of more in the space of I can be creative and I can make some change, and I'm responsible for what I do with this thing that I have, this thing that makes me different. and what I bring to the table, what I bring to the collective around this issue.
Yeah, it's sort of like the dialectic between agency and humanity, I guess. So like there's this combo of, yeah, I'm human. I can't change all of society overnight. I literally can't. And I have agency to make some changes, and I have a responsibility to make those changes where I can. And, you know, it's this combo, right? Being human isn't about all or nothing, yes or no, this or that, which is so hard. We are so drawn to it. And I think partially it's because our society can be pretty traumatizing, and trauma brain likes black and white thinking, you know? So for sure. So you were mentioning, like, not mentioning, you were really focusing on like community and collective and having that like social context, basically, for understanding ourselves. How can gifted people find community? Like, where do we go? What do we do?
Well, the easiest thing is come to InterGifted. We have a big community online, and we're international. So, you know, it's everywhere from around the world. I'm in Switzerland. That's my home base, but we have people everywhere around the world. And it's a lovely place to be. I mean, we've really cultivated a community of care, one where the kind of dynamics, the black and white dynamics that we're talking about, that's not welcome and not encouraged, and you know, at the extreme, not tolerated. So we've developed quite a lovely community of really caring people who, you know, who are able to be present and vulnerable with each other, and creative and plugged into the community aspect of it, realizing that, you know, none of us can do it all on our own. And none of us can also wait for the rest of the world to do it so that we can just reap the benefits. You know, it's all a community project, so to speak. And this one happens to be international. And of course it has to be, because with a number like 2 to 5% of the general population, it's not like I just have a whole, you know, big gifted collective in my little town in the Swiss Swiss Alps. Like, you know, it's, so maybe somebody who lives in New York City or one of the big areas maybe has a more local group to plug into, but many of us don't. So being online for that, for this particular population, is really important. But then there are the in-person things. So I remember before I started InterGifted, people would always ask me, where should I meet other people like me? And I'd say, well, you got to pay attention. Because, you know, again, I said, like, the first thing is learn you're gifted. But, you know, part of the next steps would be also pay attention to when somebody else is gifted, and don't just pass over that. Because a lot of people would say then to me, I would ask them, okay, so like, you belong to this whatever book club. Do you notice any other people in there who might be gifted? And they would say, oh, now that you're mentioning it, oh, yeah, this person there, she seems to be really complex like me, and so on and so forth. And I'd say, well, talk to her, see how deep this can go, and see if she knows about giftedness. And, you know, that's like scary to people. They're like, oh my God, do I dare bring up this word? But if you're in the right situation, you know, you can bring it up and say, hey, has anybody ever suggested that you're gifted? I see things that are similar with me, and I'm gifted, and, you know, just in a nice, easy way. And then so making those connections and actually talking about it to people, and not everybody will be open to it. I've had plenty of people in my life say, what? No, no way. Even though I'm sure they're gifted, you know, they're like, no way, I'm not going there. But you don't have to, once again, you don't have to have everybody agree with you or want to talk about the thing or whatever. You just need enough. There's 8 billion people and growing in the world. You know, none of us can manage all that. We don't need all of them. We just need a few. And so it's okay to just kind of experiment and get to know the people around you. And the more that you know, obviously, the more you kind of understand what you need about, like, within friendships and also work relationships and the other kinds of relationships that you navigate in your life. And then that's helpful, because obviously the more you understand your relational needs, the more you can get them met. And so, yeah, there's kind of the both sides of it, like tapping into the community that already exists. So like through InterGifted, for example, there are other online communities as well for giftedness. But then kind of doing it also more proactively in your regular life where you don't already have any like a formed community, but you're being courageous and experimental in reaching out to the people that you do interact with and not just like letting them pass, going, maybe that person could have been gifted, but I didn't dare bring it up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that takes a lot of guts to, mention to someone, hey, is this, here's an identity that might suit you that you might not even know anything about. Like that could be super scary. But also imagine the relief if you were to bring that up and someone's like, oh my goodness, yeah. And like I've been trying to understand what this means for me as an adult, and you guys can figure it out together, and like how cool that would be. So I, whenever my brain takes me to like worst case scenario, what if this happens? What if everything crashes and burns? I'm like, okay, that's fair and that's valid and possible. But what else is possible? And so
Right.
it's like, if I'm gonna imagine the horrible, I have to imagine the amazing too. And so I
Yeah.
like force myself to imagine both scenarios. And then I make a decision from that place instead of making a decision from only the big, bad, terrible, scary thing.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and that's what lets somebody like you or me go out in public and say the thing, because we both know, like, yeah, you're going to have some people that say whatever they're going to say about you, not pleasant things. Or you're going to have people who are really resistant to the ideas that you're bringing out and run in the opposite direction. But for every two people, that run away, you might have three or four or five that say, oh my God, you're changing my life by just daring to mention this. And yeah, that's huge. And then now I think it's even easier to talk about these things because somebody can just go online, go on Instagram or whatever, and type in the hashtag, neurodivergent or gifted or whatever, and they can see a whole, like I said, a whole collective raising awareness about these things and read the individual stories and stuff and realize, like, okay, this is not something that I need to be scared of and run away from. This is really something that I can lean into and find out more about. And, then there's a timing issue, of course. I've had people who I've told 10 years ago, listen, I think you're gifted. And then they come back 10 years after and go, I was not ready to hear that at that time, but I'm so glad you planted the seed because now the tree is starting to grow, And so, yeah, you never know kind of how you're touching somebody's life. Obviously, as long as you're not like forceful about it or
Right.
whatever,
Like,
like
it's
you don't have to
one of
be,
the
evangelical about it. You can just, you can just kind of share with an open mind and an open heart and see what comes of it.
Yeah, because I think one of the biggest tenets of the neurodiversity paradigm is that everyone has their own agency and the ability to identify however they want to, period. And there is nothing like, it's not our job to tell people what
Yeah.
they are. It's our job to listen and accept people for who they say they are. And that's something I'm learning, something I have struggled with, because I think I know I think I know everything sometimes, and I don't.
Yeah.
So important to know. Something I was curious about is how you've noticed your giftedness affects you in your adult life. I know you mentioned a little bit of this earlier, like, I'll never have another 9 to 5. I, need to find these accommodations that work for me. But in your life now, like the way you've constructed your life to accept and embrace your giftedness, what are some of those like accommodations you've made? What are some of the ways your giftedness impacts you as a grown-up?
The biggest thing for me is like I need a lot of intellectual input, complex intellectual input. Otherwise, I kind of feel like I'm dying. I mean, that might sound extreme, but it's really the feeling that I have. So, like, if I go for some days and it's just chit chat conversation about like the weather or whatever, I just start to feel like I'm zoning out and I can't stay with it. I mean, even if it's like in an educational setting, when I'm doing trainings, for example, not when I'm giving trainings, but when I'm a student, when the information stays too simplistic and just keeps repeating, I mean, too simplistic for my taste, right? Or for what I feel like I need, and it just kind of keeps repeating, I'm like zoning out. I'm like, okay, bye bye, and I go somewhere in my head and make up, worlds of something else, or I just kind of like go into what one of my colleagues calls hibernation, gifted hibernation. And it's like my brain is just going on hibernate, and you know, I can give the responses that are needed and I can, you know, still get the good grade or whatever, but I'm like not engaged and I'm not present. And so I've noticed like I really need that daily intellectual input, you know, that intellectual stimulation. It needs to be quite complex. So like in my case, I'm always reading, you know, 10 books at a time, cross-referencing fields and this and that and whatever. And people sometimes joke about it, how much I read. But when I don't, I just feel like I don't know what's going on. Like I just can't engage in life. And so that's really important. And that's kind of across contexts. So for work, for example, that means I can't just keep like repeating the same conversations or the same things again and again. Otherwise, I start to just disengage and I can't, it's like I can't be present. I can't like muster up my life's energy to be there. Which of course, like you can imagine, could feel pretty bad for the people that are around me if I'm not communicating it well and if I'm not taking care of myself. Like if I just keep putting myself in situations where I'm zoning out because it's not intellectually engaging, people feel that, right? Like, and of course I feel that, and it doesn't feel good for them nor for me. And so it's my responsibility to figure that out and communicate well, like why I would spend time with people or not, and in what situations and in what situations not. And yeah, like keeping that in mind across context. Then if we would get into the other areas of intelligence, like emotional or creative, the same thing kind of applies, or existential is a big one. Like existential giftedness is a big one where there are people who, you know, they need to ask the big questions about the meaning of life and what's beyond and spiritual development and that kind of thing. And if they don't have that element around in their life, in their work, or in their relationships, they're going to be zoning out and they're like not going to be able to keep engaging. And a lot of times people will be like, well, stop asking such big questions. Like, I don't care if this has something to do with the meaning of life. Like, I just want to enjoy the dinner I'm having right now or whatever. And so again, it's like about being aware that you have that need and getting it met. So that in my case, for example, I can identify who are good partners for discussing high level, complex, multi-theory, multi-dimensional things, and who I should stay simpler with. And so when I'm in a mood and I really need that input, I don't go spend my time with somebody that isn't gonna be able to engage in that. Otherwise, I'm just gonna frustrate them and I'm gonna frustrate myself. And I'll end up like getting mad and feeling suppressed and whatever else, when it was actually my choice who I spent my time with, you know? So, and then it's like making sure every day I'm getting some of that input somehow or another, and that it's now nobody else's responsibility to provide that to me. You know, it's like spoon feed that to me. It's up to me. Like I have to wake up and say, this is a legitimate need. How do I get it met? And meeting it, because if I meet it enough, again, I don't need all day, every day, tons of intellectual input. I need it enough. And when I get enough, then I can go to my more simpler relationships. Well, I mean, again, this is sounding a little bit too like it's either complex or it's either simple. Nothing's, you know, nothing's that non-nuanced. But in any case, just to make the example, I will just go to a more simpler relationship, like one that's not going to have a lot of intellectual complexity in it, and I can go enjoy myself because I did fill that intellectual complexity in another way. So I just have to make sure that I'm like managing what I need and taking it seriously, because I've gone through times in my life, and I mean, I know I speak for a lot of other people when I say this. I'm just giving my own example, but this is a very common thing I hear. I've gone through times in my life where I tell myself that that's crazy, probably, to need that much intellectual input, and then I don't do it, and then I go in, you know, simpler situations, and I'm raging inside, and I'm blaming people, and I'm getting mad, and I'm blaming myself, and I'm. And none of that's necessary because I just need to know that those needs are legitimate, you know, and meet them. I think where this becomes really difficult is if people have jobs or they're in primary relationships where the other people can't handle their complexity or don't want it or don't see a need for it or whatever. And so if somebody is in a job or their main relationship is not meeting those needs, then they might have to work harder to get them met other places. So, for example, coming into gifted community is really helpful for somebody who, let's say, their major relationship is with a non-gifted person. they need to get that intellectual complexity mirrored and validated and reciprocated somewhere. And if it's not going to be at their home, they might get like other wonderful needs met within their main relationship. It's not like they should just leave their relationship, but they shouldn't expect their partner to fulfill that particular thing if that partner doesn't have that same kind of way of thinking and doesn't have that same kind of need. And so then they should go outside of the relationship and get that met, you know? And same thing with a job. If you have to do a job and it doesn't require your intellectual complexity, that's obviously going to be painful because a job is usually many hours of your day and your week. And so then make sure that you have that social community outside where you're getting those intellectual needs met, and then it can compensate, you know? Obviously, for some people, they're like, they don't feel like they can compromise on that. And they feel like they have to be in a romantic relationship or a primary relationship with another gifted person, or that they have to work in a gifted friendly context. But sometimes we don't have those choices. You know, I speak from a pretty privileged position to even say, oh, we have all these choices. There are many cultures like you don't have a choice who you end up with your primary relationship, or you don't have a choice where you end up working because of economic conditions or whatever situation. So it's not like, when I say like being creative, it's not like, oh, just choose everything you want, because sometimes you just don't have choice. Sometimes you just have to be where you are. But wherever you are, whatever your conditions, you can always validate those needs and meet them in whatever way your conditions allow you to meet them. But you probably do have to be creative to do it.
Yeah, because I think I've definitely noticed some, like in my own experience, like when you don't get those needs for complex interaction, complex stimulation, when those needs don't get met, especially as a child, it can start to feel like, oh, my needs are too much. Oh, I just shouldn't need this. And so instead of going and seeking and getting those needs filled elsewhere, you just shut that part of yourself down. And that's such a shame for any person to shut down any part of themselves. Like, I think the beauty of community is being welcomed for who you are. And so we will definitely link the Intergifted community in the show notes. So if you're listening and you're like, yes, this is for me, go
join
be
us.
A part of it. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So we're getting here towards the end of the episode. And I always like to ask at the end, you know, we have a lot of ADHD listeners. So if anybody's been zoning out, now's the time to zone back in. Hello. What is maybe one thing you would hope people would take away from our conversation today?
Okay, well, hello, anybody who's been zoning out. The big takeaway that I would say is really take the time to get to know whatever your neurodivergences are. So as giftedness is my main thing, take the time to figure out, are you gifted? And if so, how? Like, use it like a study, like a personal study. Like, I often describe it as your life project. Like, this is not something that you figure out one day, like you get the IQ score of whatever, and then you go, okay, I'm gifted. And then as if like the rest of your life is going to figure it out for itself and just magically present itself to you. Or as if that doesn't make any difference for your life. It does make a difference. However you find out you're gifted, even if you just like self-identify from a checklist or whatever, it doesn't have to be, you know, professional identification. Once you figure it out, take it seriously and make it your life's project. Just like with any of the neurodivergences, you know, make it your life's project to understand it and to get creative with it, and to use that knowledge to validate your needs and to creatively get them met, and then courage to speak out.
Yeah. I love that. Yes. Okay. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much. This has been literally such a life-giving and fulfilling conversation. Thank you. Talk about getting complex intellectual needs met. Yeah. I feel like I've learned so much. Thank you so much for being here. And remind people again, where can they follow you? Where can they find you online?
Online, we are at intergifted.com. And then all of our handles everywhere are also at Intergifted. So you can find us on Instagram, LinkedIn, where else? And we're on Twitter as well. Facebook, of course. We're pretty active on all of those channels. So, and then we have on our website, we have got like our blog and lots of media and podcasts. And I do a podcast on conversations on gifted trauma. So the kind of trauma that gifted people experience throughout their lives, feeling like too much and suppressing their gifted needs and loneliness and all of the other things that any of our gifted listeners will know so well. So yeah, there's lots out there to be explored, and I welcome you all to go have fun and get creative with what you find.
That's amazing. Okay. Thank you so much for this conversation, and everybody listening, I will talk to you next Saturday.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it. If you did, I would so appreciate it if you would leave a review or a rating or whatever it is that you can do on the platform you're listening on. It really helps get the podcast out to other people who need to hear it. So again, thank you for listening. Thank you for the review if you decide to leave one, and I will see you next time.